Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 199. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about Buddhist monks, trekking, and purple sticky rice as we go to the country of Laos. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I do have some news stories for you. The first one is a family has been banned, or was originally banned, from Carnival Cruise Lines for life. And they were banned because the cruise line thought that they had scratched some of the furniture in their cabin. And it wasn't until they produced photos that showed that those scratches had happened previously that Carnival dropped the issue. So something to think about if you take a cruise. Also think about that when you pick up your next rental car, as long as we're talking about that. IFJ, the International Federation of Journalists, is calling for a boycott of Fiji. If you're unaware, there was a coup in Fiji. We talk about this more on This Week in Travel this week, about the situation in Fiji. And just so you're aware, at least one organization is calling for you to boycott that country. Speaking of countries you may not want to travel to, Afghanistan has its first national park. Thanks to U.S. taxpayers who spent nearly $1 million to help establish the landmark, there is a national park in Afghanistan. You can't drive there. The roads don't get there yet. So, still a country probably not quite yet ready for mainstream tourism. For links to those news stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Sam Oppenheim. Sam has joined us on two other shows previously, both talking about trekking in India, as well as the show about Cuba. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me back again. It's great.
This time we wanted to talk about Laos, or Laos, for those of us who haven't been there and don't know not to pronounce the S. You went there recently. I think it was about 6 months ago?
Yeah, it was March 2008.
Cool. And we've talked about it briefly on the show as part of larger trips. We've talked about it, I think, when we talked to Sherry Ott about her trip around the world, and I know also in the very first season of The Amateur Traveler, when we talked about a trip around the world, we also talked about Laos. What led you to Laos, first of all?
Well, I was traveling around the world for a year, basically all in Asia, and so Laos just fit right in the middle quite well, in between Thailand and Cambodia and Vietnam.
Now, how can you travel around the world and stay in Asia? Doesn't that...
I actually meant to spend a year in India, but I had enough after 8 months and spent 4 months in Southeast Asia and China.
Okay. And so where did you go in Laos, first of all, and what itinerary would you recommend for somebody who was going to go to that country?
Right. Well, I went to Laos for about 10 days, and I loved my itinerary. I wouldn't change it a bit, but I maybe would have stayed longer. Mm-hmm. And what I did was I came in overland from Thailand and went to Vientiane, the capital, first. Mm-hmm. Then, because I was actually traveling with some other people who had a better budget than I did, we decided to fly to Luang Prabang. But most people stop in Van Vang, which is like this party town in between the two. And so the normal route is to go Vientiane, Van Vang, then Luang Prabang, but we flew right to Luang Prabang. And then we went up into the mountains, and we spent the rest of our trip up there doing some trekking and spent a couple nights in Nong Khao, where there's these wonderful cliffs and a river. And then we took a riverboat back to Luang Prabang. And I had a guidebook that told me all about how wonderful it was in the south of Laos, but I skipped it because of time constraints, and we flew from Luang Prabang to Siem Reap to see Angkor Wat in Cambodia.
Okay. Now, you said that Van Vieng was a party town. I'm assuming you're talking about a backpacker sort of destination.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who listens to this who has thought about going there and is under the age of 30 has probably thought about going to Van Vieng. I'm actually kind of shocked that I didn't go there, because my other friend who kind of followed my itinerary a month later went there, and so did almost everyone else I met. But yeah, I don't know. It sounds kind of cool. It's inner tubing down a river, and you stop and get drunk along the way and end up losing your money, your camera, and anything you brought with you.
Which is why the under 30 is in there, you're saying? At some point you get a little two-something for that?
Yeah.
Okay. And then from your trip, what are the highlights? What really stands out for you?
Trekking in the mountains in Laos is phenomenal and far better than what I did in Thailand, because in general, Laos is more undeveloped and rural, and so it felt a little more authentic, like you were really getting out there to see villages. The rivers, I mean, Laos is landlocked, so the rivers are really the jewels of the country, so river boating, fishing, hanging out by the river, those are the highlights. But Luang Prabang is just a fantastic, gorgeous, wonderful city. I would recommend any traveler anywhere in the world stay over there for 3 or 4 nights.
And we say any traveler. We already talked about Van Vieng being a backpacker sort of destination. Luang Prabang, you're saying, would appeal to a broader range of travelers.
Right, yeah. Okay. I mean, trekking is obviously a certain subgroup of people who are willing to go up in the mountains, but Luang Prabang is absolutely gorgeous and charming. I'm pretty sure anyone would enjoy it and love it.
Okay. Now, when you were on talking about trekking India, we had pictures that, and we should say Sam is a photographer, so if you're looking at pictures now, there's a pretty good chance you're looking at one of his pictures rather than something that I found that's a Creative Commons on Flickr. But that was a very sparse landscape. I'm picturing you're trekking here in jungle.
Yes, definitely. Okay.
You're trekking in jungle. What does your flexibility with comfort have to be to trek in Laos, first of all?
Well, I went with a married couple, and one of them stayed behind.
Okay.
So, and they're very adventurous people who were traveling extensively around the world. Mike just decided that he would rather not go trekking for an overnight trip. And it did rain on us while we were trekking, so it got a little muddy, got a little wet. It was a little rough, but I saw a side of the country that I wouldn't have otherwise seen, and it wasn't that strenuous. When I was on the show last time, that was years ago, but it was a 7-day or 8-day trek.
Right.
This was just an overnight trek. It wasn't that strenuous. I think it was 5 or 6 hours total walking, maybe, and a lot of it was uphill, but the paths were very well managed. And we spent the night in a village with people to cook for us. And there weren't really facilities, though. There wasn't running water.
Okay.
You just have to be prepared for 1 day uphill, 1 day downhill, and no running water.
Okay. And when you got back to Mike, you said, oh, what you really missed was
the faces of the kids on the mountaintop village playing and just being just rural, just absolutely almost untouched by tourism, authentic humanity in all its glory and village life. It was fantastic. I loved it.
And this was an organized trek.
This was. I had a great tour guide, and he actually brought along a second tour guide, because the way it works in Thailand and Laos and a lot of countries around that fringe of the Himalayas, Burma as well, is the mountains are full of ethnic groups.
Sure.
And the lowlands are full of the dominant ethnic group. So when you get to the mountains, you need a different ethnic language to speak.
Okay.
We had, from the place where we got off the tour bus, or the, not the tour bus, just a regular bus, from there, we hired a guide service, and then they spoke English and the local languages of Laos, and then they hired another guide that came with us to the mountains who spoke Akha, which is the tribal group language for the highlands people.
And you said that the couple you were traveling with, only half of which went trekking, had a little different budget than you had. How expensive are we talking about for this portion of the trip?
that's one of the reasons why I can see Lao from two sides, mm-hmm. is that, like, in Luang Prabang, I stayed for $8 a night, and they stayed for $50 a night.
Okay.
So I had a single room with a fan, and I was totally comfortable. It was clean. It had an attached bath, and they had a beautiful, lovely air-conditioned room with breakfast included and a concierge. I can see my parents traveling the Luang Prabang, and I can see backpackers traveling the Luang Prabang. So I've seen both sides of it since I was traveling with them.
Okay. And you had a guide, language issues. If you hadn't had a guide, getting by for somebody who doesn't know the local language.
Well, we only had a guide that one trip. We did not hire a guide for the 10 days in Lao. And the language was an issue sometimes, but not that often. Like any other country in the world, if you're buying something, they know how to use a calculator.
Sure.
Or pointing. And the monks are highly educated. Anytime you're passing by a monastery or doing tourism in any of the Buddhist locales in the country, someone there knows how to speak English and answer questions because that's part of the education system.
Interesting. And no terrible misunderstandings that happened with the language issues?
No, I don't remember any terrible misunderstandings at all. But I had been traveling in Asia at that point in time for a long time. So I was kind of used to a lot of traveler's charades. And
sure.
But organized tours go to Lao all the time,
right.
And they bring along a translator guide, and it works out fine. But backpackers don't, and they get along fine also.
Okay. And in the other cities, before you went up in the highlands, what did you see? What did you spend time seeing? You mentioned the monasteries.
Right. So basically, my trip is in four parts. The first part was Vientiane, which is the capital. And it was a fantastic, like, chilled out capital city. Like, I have never in my life been to a country, been to their capital city, and felt the same way. It had very little traffic, very little tourism, no McDonald's, no chain stores. I mean, Lao just opened up from being a closed communist regime recently, and they haven't agreed to let in a lot of the signs of westernization. So it's very rural. It has less motor traffic because of a generally more rural, more poor population. So the capital doesn't have any high rises. It doesn't feel like a capital city at all. On the other hand, it didn't feel that wonderful either. Vientiane was not that charming. The Buddhist locations, once you paid the fee and went inside, were great. But the city itself was just all right. It was nice. The second place I went was Luang Prabang, which is what I rave about. I tell people who have high budgets to fly there for three nights, four nights, or whatever. And people who are backpacking, I tell them not to miss Luang Prabang. It was a hilly city. It reminds me a little bit of Manhattan because the Mekong River flows down towards it and then splits and flows around it. So it creates like a peninsula. It's not actually an island like Manhattan. It's a peninsula. But still, it has rivers on both sides. And in the middle, it has a highlands topped with a temple. And you can walk across the peninsula in 20 minutes. It's a city. It has streets and there's buildings on both sides of all the streets. But then on the other sides of the river, you can take a boat or cross a bamboo bridge and go to villages built out of bamboo with grass hut roofing. And every day, the monks come from the villages to the center of the city to go to school or go to monasteries or beg and get bowls of rice. So you get that whole Southeast Asian monastic community coming and going every day across bamboo bridges, which is just so picturesque.
Interesting. What was the moment in Lao that you felt closest to home and the moment you felt furthest from home?
I felt closest to home in Lao when I was sitting down at a nice restaurant with good serving staff eating delicious food, because I like eating ethnic food and I live in New York City. And you can get that if you're willing to pay for it in the big cities in Lao. The moment I felt farthest from home had to be when I was up in that village in the mountains after trekking, because it was an alien landscape. The ground was this deep, dark, iron-rich red soil that had been completely denuded of all vegetation, so it looked like we were on the planet Mars. And every single house was elevated on stilts of bamboo, because that's the way the local architecture is built. And the floors were all made out of split bamboo flooring. And because of the local custom, I had to take my shoes off. So here I am standing on split bamboo, and my feet feel different, looking out through a grass roof at an alien Martian-looking landscape with these floating houses, and there was this morning fog rolling in underneath the houses, and people, pigs, and dogs were disappearing and reappearing. It was amazing, fantastic.
Now, I interrupted you. You said your trip was in four parts. You talked about Vientiane, Luang Prabang, and then the other two parts would be your trek, and what's the...
The fourth is Nong Khao, which we were traveling by the seat of our pants, and we didn't know what we were going to do. We ended up there because we made friends with someone else who'd already hired a car there. And we were like, oh, sure, that's a lot better than taking a bumpy 8-hour non-air-conditioned bus. So we hopped in the car with them. And it ended up being a fantastic location. I highly recommend it. It was just, you know how a lot of parts of Southeast Asia have that limestone karst cliff that just rises up out of the ground? Mm-hmm. You see it all the way from the Halong Bay in Vietnam up to the Chinese area and down through Thailand. Well, here's this place where the river has cut through in between these two gigantic limestone peaks. I think one of them is called Princess Peak. So you get all these like tourist-oriented hotels on one side of the river. And if as you look out at sunset, you're trapped between these tall mountain peaks with a glowing river. It's just very idyllic and peaceful. There's nothing else to sell it. I mean, that's one of the things about Laos. You're not going there to see the pyramids of Egypt. Mm-hmm. You're not going there to eat Thai food. You're not going there to go to a national park. You're not going there to see the remnants of great civilizations like the ruins. You're just going there to enjoy what it is, which is this tiny, landlocked, rural piece of like leftover Buddhism in the center of Asia. It feels like a land that time forgot a little bit. And I'm worried that that will change. I'm worried that tourism will change it a lot. So I'm kind of sitting here saying, go see Laos, but don't go see it too much. It's a strange position to be in, but I've been to all of Southeast Asia. I recently went to Burma, and I have to say Laos is my favorite, far and away, of all the places I've been there.
Well, and as you and I were talking about coming on the show and doing a show on Laos, I've heard that so consistently, or at least so often, from people who've been in Southeast Asia that just weren't even necessarily planning on going to Laos, but really fell in love with it.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt.
What is the Laoness of it? What about it is the attraction, do you think?
They're unpresupposing. They're authentic. They're not monkeying around for attention from tourists. They're just being themselves, more or less. And you find that everywhere you go in the world, but you find it all the time in Laos.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Any one person you met who really stands out that way?
So many great people I met. In Nong Khao, we met a guy who said, by the way, while you're here, if you want to, I can teach you fishing. And we were like, oh, really? He's like, yeah. You want to do it? Just let me know. And so we were like, okay, why not? So Mike and I paid him and hopped down in his boat. His name was Air. We went in his boat upstream a little bit, and he brought out like these circular rope nets that you see them fishing with in the rivers in Laos. He taught us how to throw this circular weighted net that's called a zero net, and you're supposed to throw it so it forms like a circle in the air and then falls with the weights around the fish in the water. We didn't catch anything. You know, he was like, I'm warning you, it's really hard. Rained a lot last night. The river's fast and high. It's not a good day for fishing. We might not catch anything. But he was like totally honest about it. And he charged us a very, very small amount for his little fishing lesson. But he enjoyed teaching us. But it was not his main job to teach us. Like, he was just a normal person who just offered it. I'm sure we paid him more than he probably would have gotten as a daily wage had he not done it. But I didn't feel like it was his thing. He didn't have signs up. He didn't have a business front. It was just like a connection. I'm sure he's done it before. It's not like his first time, but things aren't yet completely formulated. People haven't really staked out all of their territory for all their businesses. He was just really friendly. He was chit-chatting with us as we went in broken English. He wasn't the best teacher in the world, but he was really friendly, and it was really fun, and it was just kind of like a really authentic experience. And that's what gets me about Laos, is every minute there was completely authentic. The people were just being real and letting you enjoy what's there in their country. And I don't know. There's something magical about it. It's that timeless quality that I try to capture in all my photography. And I just found it coming out in everyone in Laos.
You had some expectation of what you're going to see. I know you do your homework ahead of time. What surprised you?
The monks surprised me a little bit.
How so?
Well, I hadn't yet been to Burma.
Okay.
Burma and Laos have a similar monastic community where it's a poor country and all the children get educated in the monastery. So if you have children, you're very, very, very likely to send them to a monastery for the first 12 years of their life from about age 6 to age 18. And then they disrobe and go to college or get a job. So I hadn't seen that before, where the monks are young and they're all over the place, everywhere, everywhere you go. But they're not actually thinking that they're going to stay monks. So you catch them at internet cafes. I caught one smoking a cigarette, and I asked if I could take a picture. And he put the cigarette behind his back and said, "Now you can." And, you know, and it's like they're kids. They're being playful. They're being honest. And they're growing up, and they're becoming teenagers. And then eventually they're going to take the robes off. I have this picture of eight monks at the internet cafe. And it's like they're not monks. I mean, they are monks, but they're not monks. They're like seeing people in school uniform, you know?
Interesting.
I didn't know that would be the case.
Any warnings you would give about traveling to Laos? Besides, when you go to Van Vieng, you're going to lose your camera and your money and your...
Food. The food is not something to look forward to. There's a reason why I've never seen a Lao restaurant in New York City. The good food in Laos is basically Thai food. So that's not to say that, like, it's not Lao food. It's just that maybe Thailand exported it first, so we know it is Thai food. Maybe it is Lao food. But the food that they said was authentic Lao food, and in every country I go to, I try to find that. It just wasn't that exciting. We're talking about river weed. We're talking about Mekong fish. We're talking about a milky curry, which has no flavor and no kick, whereas Thai curries, tons of flavor and kick to them. The only thing I didn't try that sounded like it was quite good was this fried buffalo skin. I don't eat red meat. I only eat fish. But that might have been good.
And when you say Mekong fish, the Mekong, as I picture it, is very muddy for one thing. So I know my grandfather used to think he didn't like fish, and then he realized it was the fish from the muddy rivers in Colorado that he didn't like.
Well, I had a Mekong fish in curry, and it wasn't bad, but it tasted bland. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You're not going to starve. You know, don't be afraid. All the cities have Western food if you need to get your Western food fix on. But if you go to a restaurant and ask what's the Lao food or the local food, I didn't find it to be that exciting. Okay. As a caveat, there was one thing in Lao that blew me away and that I did like, and that was the glutinous sticky rice.
Okay.
They have this sticky rice, this glutinous rice. It's called either sticky rice or glutinous rice, and it actually is grown that way. It's actually a different breed of rice. So when you boil it up, it sticks to itself, and it can't be separated with, like, a fork. You eat it with your hands, and you pull it apart. It's amazing. I don't think you get it in the States. It's not the same as mango sticky rice at, like, a Thai restaurant, although it's kind of the same. This is really, really sticky, really glutinous rice. The Lao people, and I almost said Laotian, but I read on Wikipedia last night that they don't like people called Laotian. The Lao people, they eat with their hands and they use the sticky rice and they add like dips to it. So what you get is you get like a little bowl full of spicy dip and a little bowl full of sweet dip and a little bowl full of like meat dip. And you take the sticky rice and you dip it in the dips and then you put it in your mouth. And it's good. It's fascinating. It's very different.
You made mention earlier of the guidebooks said something. How would you rate how the guidebook said? Were the things that were disappointing, things that they left out?
The guidebooks that I read talked about how nice Southern Lao was, but also how hard it is to get around the country. And they were absolutely right about that. It is one of the most difficult countries to get around in. It's bumpy transportation, not well organized, a little confusing because you don't speak the language to get tickets for the local buses. I would highly recommend if you have a budget to fly in and fly out and or hire a car and driver if you can afford it. I mean, that was much more comfortable, the one leg of the trip we did that way. However, if you're backpacking, the guides are right. You can follow what the guidebooks say and you can get local transportation and bump your way across the country. And I've done that a lot. The guidebooks were right about where to eat. The guidebooks were right about where to stay. I don't really have a problem. I was using the Lonely Planet Southeast Asia guidebook and it got me around.
Okay.
But also used whoever I met a lot. So
sure, yeah.
I've been using the same types of guidebooks and traveling the same way for so long, I just kind of accept the fact that my first choice that I put a star next to is always going to be full because everyone goes to that first choice.
Sure.
And then you just walk around the neighborhood and find another hotel.
As we go to wind this down, mm-hmm. one thing you should know and one thing you should pack before you go to Laos.
Honestly, I would pack like candy bars or Clif bars, especially if you're a vegetarian or you don't eat meat. It's a little difficult, and it's not that easy to come by or find. It was the only country that I had trouble with in Southeast Asia. So I was really glad that I had some leftover candy bars. And you don't have like Western products there at all. It's like okay. a real vacation from consumerism. One thing you should know is probably the history. Laos is one of the most bombed places on Earth, and it was really brought in against its own will into the Vietnam War because mm-hmm. the North Vietnamese used it and then the Americans bombed it. And there's still a little bit of a legacy of that. There are some people with injuries, and there's kind of a history, and that's kind of the reason why the country went politically the way it went. Mm-hmm. Also, you should know a little bit about its relationship to China and Vietnam. It's the only landlocked country in all of Southeast Asia, and it's probably the poorest country, although Burma might be equal. And China kind of uses it as a vassal state. So China gives Laos sugarcane to grow. Laos grows sugarcane, gives the sugarcane back to China. China processes it into sugar because they have factories. And then Laos buys the sugar back from China processed. So Laos doesn't have any industry. It's a very dependent, rural, countryside place. That's part of what makes it charming.
Sure, yeah, I understand. What's one thing you wish you had known before you had gone?
Something I wish I had known before going to Laos was that the ATM situation is a little bit dicey. They only have ATMs in Luang Prabang and the capital Vientiane, at least when I went a year ago. And they had very few. In fact, I remember in Luang Prabang, one day we went to the only ATM in downtown that we knew of. And it was out of money. You could no longer withdraw money. And because it was a Saturday or a Sunday, the next day they hadn't refilled it yet. And so we ended up running very short on money and in a seriously dicey situation where we had to borrow from other travelers until we got back to Luang Prabang after trekking. So please, if you go, bring a lot of cash, and you can actually use U.S. dollars for a lot of purchasing at restaurants, hotels, and shopping. So get your cash and don't rely on the ATMs.
And as a photographer, what's your favorite photograph that you took in Laos?
It would have to be one of the ones of kids. The kids in all countries in the world are adorable, but I think my favorite ones were these kids we caught playing with a pack of cigarettes. Oh. They weren't inhaling, but they were lighting them and blowing smoke. That was in Luang Prabang on a beach. Oh, these great kids jumping off of a boat into the river. Just playing, it was like spring, you know, it had this great moment, this feeling of joy, of youth, these little kids jumping in the river. I have a great memory of these teenage girls that were at the Akka Hilltop Village. So here we are at night, there's no electricity, in a bamboo hut, and these girls are playing cards with flashlight. I actually gave them the deck of cards because their old deck of cards were all beaten up and missing cards. And finally, if I had to pick an adult photo, I would either pick the black and white photographs I took of people hand-hewing logs to build old-fashioned houses, or I took one photograph of a monk, an older monk, and that's really evocative. Those are probably my favorite photos. Maybe also the view off the bridge in Nong Khao. That Nong Khao is so memorable because it had this bridge over this river that just cuts through the mountains, and so you get these sunset shots. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's a very idyllic place in the world. I would go back in a second.
Okay. Now, you said that the guidebooks did a pretty good job for you. Was there anything they didn't cover?
One thing the guidebooks didn't cover is local NGOs and nonprofits that you can donate to or work at. And one day while walking through Luang Prabang, I came upon a volunteer place where they teach local kids and adults computers and photography. As I'm a photographer, I immediately went upstairs to their private gallery called Laos Through Our Eyes. And I really enjoyed the gallery of student work. And actually, I wanted to go back and spend a week there volunteering, but it didn't work out in my schedule. But it struck me as a very important place that I visited, and I'm sure it's still there. It seemed to have good financing. But you might want to, if you feel like being engaged in your tourism, Google and look up and explore other options such as what I just mentioned. There's one thing I didn't mention. The night market in Luang Prabang was amazing for shopping. And I don't even like shopping that much in foreign countries because I don't like having to bring everything home.
Sure, yeah.
But I hope that you'll put a few photos in there right now as we're talking for people to look at to whet their appetite. If anyone goes there, you have to shop at that night market. It's amazing.
Says the non-shopper. Interesting. What kind of things did you see?
I bought silks and brought them home to my family. I bought Lao alcohol with snakes and scorpions preserved inside of it. umbrellas, paintings, toys, Buddhas. A lot of it's knick-knack, but it was a fantastic market, the silks especially.
Excellent.
At the end of my trip, I took a riverboat down the Mekong, and that was fantastic as well.
Now, that was from the capital?
No, from Nong Khao to Luang Prabang.
Okay.
I don't think it matters what direction you take it in. I also took a riverboat in Burma recently, and I just find the pace, and first of all, the roads are so terrible. Taking a boat is much preferable to pumping in the back of a bus. And then the buses in this country, they play Lao music with subtitles to like karaoke along with, so the locals are going crazy in the bus, and you're sitting there wishing you brought your earplugs. The boat is so peaceful and idyllic. I mean, the whole country is peaceful and idyllic, but yeah, I recommend a boat ride.
Excellent. You really know you're in Lao when what?
Purple glutinous rice in a bamboo tube.
In a bamboo tube?
It's cooked in the tube.
Okay.
And I just got back from Burma, and I couldn't find it anywhere there. I've never seen it anywhere else. It's naturally purple. It has like pigment in the rice. And they boil it in the bamboo tube. They do that in other countries in Southeast Asia, but not purple rice. So what they do is they actually put the rice and the water in a tube of bamboo, throw it on the fire, and then peel the bamboo off so all that's left is like the inner paper of the bamboo skin. And then they hand it to you still warm. And you peel the paper like you're unwrapping a candy bar. And inside is this sticky purple rice that's sweetened with, and there's coconut sprinkled on it.
Interesting.
I haven't found it anywhere else in the world. I wish I could have it right now.
And if you had to summarize Lao in three words, what three words would you use?
Idyllic, unspoiled, and rural.
Excellent. Sam, thanks so much for coming back on the show and telling us some about the country of Lao.
Thank you, Chris. It was a real pleasure to be back again.
I have one internet resource for you, and that's another one that a listener sent in that I'm thinking about using in an upcoming trip to Paris, and this is Parisien d'un jour, which is Parisian for a day. It is basically a free program where residents of Paris can take you on a 2 to 3 hour guided tour. And I'm seeing more and more of these pop up as people who are very proud of their city and the history of it or the culture of it want to show it to visitors. And so this is one that I might take advantage of. The URL is a little longer, so I'll put this in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. And in news from the community this week, I heard from Steve, who said, "Hi, Chris, just thought I'd drop you a line from sunny Liverpool, England, to tell you how big a fan I am of the show. I came across it on iTunes whilst doing some research for my next trip, and I've ended up listening to each of your shows, not just the ones that are relevant to me. And I'm always amazed when somebody's listened to every show. I find them really inspiring and think it's a touch of genius talking to people who are passionate about the places they are giving us an insight to. Just an idea for a future show would be first time around the world, big trip planning, or something along those lines. For your info, I set off in 2 weeks with my girlfriend with the aim of going London to Sydney without flying. We're visiting Holland, Germany, Denmark, Latvia, Russian, Trans-Mongolian Express, China, Hong Kong, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, and the Oz. The trip should last around 18 months, and we've been planning it for years with lots of help from your podcasts, of course. Anyway, if you ever need any reviews on those places, travel planning, travel with a partner, or solo travel, I did around the world on my own a few years ago, or anything else you might think I could help you with, I'd love to help you out in any way I can. Keep up the good work with your shows. Steve and Sarah Jane getting ready to depart the UK. And I wrote Steve, and I would like to repeat what I said last week, as I'm looking for some blog articles for some of you if you'd like to contribute to the Amateur Traveler blog. I'm actually folding the blog back into the main site and making it one site instead of two. Right now there's amateurtraveler.com and blog.amateurtraveler.com, and I'm hoping sometime in the next month that distinction will go away, as I also do a redesign, which is taking me longer than I had originally planned. But Steve, if you would like to write some articles about travel planning, that would be terrific. If people are interested in some more thematic shows, we generally do destinations and then intersperse themes periodically, let me know and we can do that. I tend to focus more on the destinations and then leave some of the travel planning, for instance, to my friends Craig and Linda at Indie Travel Podcast, for instance, which is a great resource for more of the travel planning. We had lots of wonderful comments about the show on Sicily, and it really was a wonderful episode. I was very pleased with how that one turned out. One of the most thorough responses we got was from Ira Bernstein. You may remember Ira, who came on the show and talked to us about Venice and the Veneto. And I won't read all of Ira's comment. He had 14 different points, but I thought two of them were particularly interesting. Point number 8, perhaps we are cowards, but we have been to Italy perhaps 17 times and have never driven a foot. I don't doubt the advantages of having a car, but you really don't run short of things to do using public transportation. Point number 9, on the same note, both Palermo and Naples are great cities if you like looking at auto accidents. Given point 8, it is refreshing knowing that none of the cars involved are yours. And lastly, I should point out that next episode is episode number 200. Now, truth be told, there's a few special episodes in here, so I've actually already passed episode 200, but it's the 200th regular episode of The Amateur Traveler. Total episodes podcasting, I think I've put out somewhere over 350, including all the different shows I do. But I've had some people ask, is there a way to leave comments for that show? And if you go to amateurtraveler.com/contact, I think it is, but you can find that link at the site. You can find a way to leave a comment on my Google Voice application. In fact, you can click the button there and have it call you so that you don't even have to make a long distance call. So if you're interested in leaving comments, I didn't give you any warning here. I know some of you won't listen to this until years later from now, but if you're interested in leaving comments for episode 200, try and make them relatively short. And go to amateurtraveler.com and find the contact link. With that, we're going to bring this episode of The Amateur Traveler to a close. I encourage you to drop me an email like Steve did at host@amateurtraveler.com, or leave a comment like Ira did, although it doesn't have to be as thorough as Ira's was. Also join us at the Amateur Traveler Facebook page, where we're having some discussions about your favorite ways to travel, or follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/chris2x. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral.